Talk Shoe.
Recorded live.
Good afternoon and welcome to Talk Twilight Zone.
I remember when I was a little girl, our house caught on fire. I'll never forget the look on my father's face as he gathered me up in his arms and raced to the burning building out on the pavement. And I stood there, shivering in my pajamas and watched the whole world go up in flames. And when it was all over, I said to myself, is that all there is to a fire? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friends, then let's keep dancing. Let's break out the booze and have a ball. If that's all. And when I was 12 years old, my daddy took me to the circus, the greatest show on earth. There were clowns and elephants and dancing bears, and a beautiful lady in pink tights flew high above our heads. And as I sat there watching, I had the feeling that something was missing. I don't know what, but when it was all over, I said to myself, is that all there is to the circus? Is that all there is?
You open this door with the click of a mouse. Beyond it is a world of sound, thought, and opinion. In-depth discussions of television's greatest blending of science, superstition, imagination. And you're invited along. We'll be talking Twilight Zone.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to Talking Twilight Zone. Well... Thank you so much. Yes. Today we are going to be talking about the last two episodes of this outstanding series. Unfortunately, these right, and that's perfect for that because unfortunately these last two episodes are not as wonderful as the series itself is. And
take some drugs, and they'll be wonderful for you.
Later. Yeah, you really do need that for this. You know? But I do want to welcome today. I want to welcome my co-host, Bobby. Oh, well, Bobby. I have to say, Bobby is sick today. Bobby is not going to be able to join us. He is very ill, but he's listening. He's listening, but he's very sick and he has a sore throat. So we're going to put on a great show for him. And Robert. Hello, Robert.
Hello, Lynn. Hey, I'm here. I finally made it. I'm actually on. Oh, my, the last show.
And we've got Dave here. Dave, woo!
Thank you, Lynn. Thank you.
And we've got Rick here. Woo!
There was great rejoicing.
and they all feast after.
And we even have guest seven. Who is guest seven?
I don't know. Let's keep him a mystery.
Laugh.
Why don't we, okay?
Bummer. Well, that's okay. That's all right. But, yes, this is it. This is the last two episodes of this iconic, legendary, fabulous series. And it's had many classics. And it's had many excellent episodes, and it's had its share of turkeys. It's had some duds in there, but you know what?
Oh, my.
Oh, my. I would rather have this series with all its duds than never have had this series at all. I'll take it for everything it's worth. I mean, Give me the good, the bad, and the ugly, because I love Rod Serling. I love The Twilight Zone, and I'll suffer through the bads because there's too many goods, and I wouldn't give that up for anything.
And then you have the facts of life. The facts of life.
That's right. Take the good, you take the bad. Okay, well, our first episode, which is the number 155, the second from the last episode of the series, is called The Fear. And I'm going to turn it over to you, Robert, and you can give us our opening clip.
Okay, I was afraid I would have to play this, but...
I knew you would.
And now, Mr. Serling.
The major ingredient of any recipe for fear is the unknown. And here are two about to partake of the meal. Miss Charlotte Scott, a fashion editor, and Mr. Robert Franklin, a state trooper. And the third member of the party, the unknown, that has just landed a few hundred yards away. This person or thing is soon to be met. This is a mountain cabin, but it is also a clearing in the shadows, known as the Twilight Zone.
This drum to get fear.
Makes it sound so ominous, doesn't it? It's a shame that it's not as ominous as the opening makes it sound. But, well, we've got a highway patrol trooper named Robert Franklin, and we've got this really brooding, snobby New York socialite named Charlotte Scott. And by the way, she's recuperating from a nervous breakdown. And they find themselves trapped in her remote cabin as unexplained occurrences indicate the presence of a mysterious force. Right, they see bright flashes, and they see strange craters, and the trooper's car moves on its own. But back inside the cabin, Charlie hears these strange noises on the roof. And when Robert goes outside to investigate, he finds nothing. But he notices that his car is back in place, covered in gigantic fingerprints. So the two go to sleep, and they sleep very nervously. And then they go out into the woods the next morning, and they're looking for this giant monster. And they find this enormous footprint, and it leads Charlotte to scream and run for her life. But you know what happens? She stumbles, and she falls directly in the path of a 500-foot-tall Martian with one eye. And
no, she finds out it was a dream from a Mason Day Thanksgiving parade.
That's right.
And where the balloons got away.
With one eye. And that's the carryover. It's the carryover from the real Martian, please stand up. And, you know, they realize that no one's going to believe their story. So they stand there and they face the beast. And Robert shoots it and it deflates and it reveals itself to be an enormous balloon. So the true source of the problem is this small alien spacecraft, and it's got two aliens no bigger than a thumb, and they reveal that all of their trickery has been foiled by man's ability to be afraid, and they beg their superiors to allow them to depart. They want to leave. They want to get out of there, and they finally flee. So Robert grins, and he wishes them luck, saying maybe the next place they land, they can be the giants. Mm-hmm. And then Charlotte, she asks what will happen if future invaders are giants. And Robert says he thinks that she'll spit in her eye. And she smiles. The camera tilts to the skyline. It's a shame. It's such a shame. Because the last few episodes of the greatest series of all time are deplorable. The Fear was the 92nd and last episode written by Rod Serling. And it was obvious that he was tired of both the series, and he was tired of coming up with new and interesting stories for 5 years. I mean, most of Rod's stories usually had an interesting or at least a relevant message with a pretty cool surprise ending, but not this one. This one just plain stunk. It was about fear, what makes people afraid, and in the story, a big, stupid-looking balloon did the trick. The two people in this episode were really annoying. Well, mostly the woman. The woman was really, really annoying. But the episode was just so awful, and I felt sorry for Rod that this one had to have his name attached to it. But then again, he wrote it. He put it out there. So all I can say, it is one of the biggest turkeys of all, and I give it a 0. And I think you can probably predict Bobby gave it a 0, too. So, hi, Felix. Felix made it. Yay.
All right. Yeah.
Great. Hi, Felix. Okay. So, Robert, I'm going to turn this over to you.
Okay. Yeah, I said Rod dug into his old bag of tricks to do this story. You know, when I watched this episode, it very much reminded me of something that a bunch of sorority college students would do instead of two aliens doing research in the wooded area. You could tell me that they used the ship from the invaders, it looks like it was, and then the whole giant premise from previous episodes. We also seem to get a little bit of Monsters Are Due on Maple Street, except for being set in the woods on a smaller scale. But, you know, that what this episode pretty much comes down to is I wish this was a college prank and nothing more. I mean, these must have been the two most stupidest aliens around the galaxy. If you're going to scare people, nighttime assault at best, and, you know, once it's daylight, then you kind of lose the illusion of surprise and have to retreat till it's dark again. Because, you know, their advantage is gone. The stupid alien balloon that they used to try to scare the two main characters, even as they were afraid, they were intelligent to eventually figure it out. And I guess as it loses air, that kind of gives it away, too. It looks like there must have been so much in that balloon. There must have been a hurricane in the vicinity while that balloon was kind of going down, so... But, you know, this story would have been better if at the was a college prank. You know, college students hated this socialite, or, you know, was she a writer, too, up there? Was that her?
Who?
Yeah.
Did she write?
She was a writer.
Oh, yeah.
Not a socialite, a famous writer.
And she had a nervous breakdown.
Yep.
Yeah, because that would have been perfect for, like, college students coming out and then find out towards the end that it was all a psychological situation. It wasn't no aliens, and it, you know, would have worked out better if it's just a college prank going after Hazel Court's character. What can I say? Hazel Court, I would have liked her a lot better in the Edgar Allan Poe movies, especially what she usually dresses in. I think we all get that. Anyway, the whole thing was pretty much a shopping list of what to do to make people afraid. You know, chop branches, check. Giant fingerprints on the patrol car, check. Noises on the cabin rooftop, check. A big giant footprint, big giant alien balloon. You know, a bunch of 19-year-old drunk college students would have been, you know, great as part of it. I think I would have liked it better if it was just turning out to be a prank. Is this something?
Exactly.
I mean, I could have accepted this episode more if it was done that way. But it felt more of a prank than a test at the end. Oh, it's hard to believe that the next episode coming up is our last one. I'm so sad, but...
I know.
I didn't rate this as bad as you guys. I give it at least a 1. So I give it a 1 out of 5.
Hey, you know, we have somebody from Russia here.
Mm-hmm.
Guest number 9 is from Russia, and he's joining us today.
Privyet, guest number 9.
Yeah, very good to see you here. Well, Dave.
Okay.
Save us, Dave, please. Say something nice.
Yeah, I think Robert's given up the effort with reviewing there. Sorry, Robert. Yeah, Series 5, Episode 155. Aired on the 29th of May 1964, penultimate episode in the way it was broadcast.
I was 1 year old, Dave. Yay, 1 year old me.
Oh, gosh.
I was five. I was five. I was a grown up.
I was already at the pub drinking, so not so much. it was really, it's stolen, hasn't it? I mean, I'll say what it's stolen from the next story that we're going to do, but for this one, basically it's stolen from Gulliver's Travels. Hasn't he, in one sense? Because there's this switcheroo before, by the fact that they think it's some giant. They see the spaceship, which is then small. Then they have this conversation about wishing them luck the next planet they go to. Although why the planet they go to should suffer from being occupied by them, I don't know. And then he puts the theory forward at the end that... even if they had have been giants, the girl would have stood them down. I didn't get to see it all the way through again because, again, IMDb won't let me in the UK see it. And I just saw, I've seen it in the past, but I've only seen like a 6 or 8 minute resume on YouTube earlier today.
Dave, you couldn't get me TV because they showed it this week. It was on, I think, Thursday. Or was it Wednesday? It was on, yeah.
Right. A few things occurred to me. Certainly, there was a Buffy episode. This was one where they were one of the Halloween ones where they were going to a sorority building, and the idea was that you had to make your way up to the top of the house, and they'd put a pentagram on the surface there. But Oz, one of the drummers, the guy that's a werewolf. He cut his finger on something and dripped blood onto this pentagram on the floor, and of course it suddenly brought it into life, and there was an almighty demon summoned, and the way the perspective was done with the film editing, it looked as though it was going to be a giant. And then there's a funny moment where Buffy and the Scooby gang are all looking down at this thing, and it's only a few inches tall. And forgive me if I spoil the episode for you, having already said all that, I've already spoiled it, so let me just say that then basically Buffy just squashes it with a foot. Two other things. Anybody guess what this theme is? I'm surprised Felix hasn't put anything in text. Go on.
I know who it is. I wanted the music to finish out. Oh. Land of the Giants. Yeah.
Yeah. Land of the Giants, which, of course, for obvious reasons, I'm reminded by it. And one other thing, another clip I've got, and that is from a very early classic Doctor Who story with the first Doctor, where something goes wrong with the TARDIS in flight, and they land on what they believe to be Planet of the Giants, and here's a short trailer for it.
Close the door! What do you mean, close the door?
Don't answer your voice, emergency! Close the door!
They opened! Doors opened before we properly materialized.
But what does it mean?
We have been reduced roughly to the size of an inch.
An inch? I can see a huge leg coming.
You'd do anything to get what you want, wouldn't you?
Nothing but death all around us.
The experiment must go through.
It gets more horrifying every moment.
Grandfather! Can get us back to normal size.
Oh, yes, of course I can, dear boy, yes.
Barbara!
Of course I can.
Very helpful.
And I bet Lynn's thinking, I think I would rather have watched that episode than the one I've just watched. Land of the Giants in black and white, as of course was early Twilight Zone. But that was one of my favourite stories. Not long since, that's not that been that long on DVD. Got the sentence out eventually. But yes, and I do believe you mentioned something about thingy on Maple Street, the lady who did dub the little girl's voice in the next story we're going to talk about, June Foray,
yeah.
I think she actually did some work on the Maple one as well.
With the boy, with the little boy.
Yeah, so a little bit of a crossover there. So basically that's all. I haven't really got a lot to say to it because I haven't really seen it all the way through. But basically it's Gulliver. I mean, this has been done before. I mean, Earth Girls Are Easy. I just thought I'd throw that in there. No, that's the film where the guys land in the swimming pool.
Uh-huh.
And then they as they come out of the spaceship, they grow to full size. And that has the actor who played the fly, and I'm trying to remember his name now.
Jeff Goldblum.
Yeah. Jeff Goldblum,
yeah. And the other famous guys as well, the Joker and what's he called? Ace Ventura guy.
Jim
Carrey. Carrey, yeah. So, I mean, it's been used as a trope before. And, of course, not really about alien invasion, but if you like things like that where you take an unusual sign of size, because, of course, when you think that, the universe is maybe infinitely large, and you can also go down to microscopic level, and I think I saw on YouTube a while ago a lovely display where in fact, I think it was a flash thing, not a YouTube, where you could go infinitely down, smaller and smaller and smaller. It'd tell you all the different smaller particles and subparticles. And, well, I should let Rick Wall talk about this because he knows quite a bit about this. But they go smaller and smaller and smaller. And then you could go ever increasing. So we tend to think of us, man as a 6 foot, taken as a 6 foot standard. You know, we're in the middle of infinitely large and infinitesimally small. But because those sizes are so great, you can say the planet Earth is the medium size of the planet Sun, or our solar system, because it's infinitely large in both directions. So it has been a
So Dave,
a
you're not
going
to go sing into a Monty Python song. The Earth...
No, what I'm trying to say, really, this is a missed opportunity, because the concept is a valid one. We also know in Doctor Who, it's not just the size, it's the gravity, the strength of the gravity that the aliens may come from, whatever the world. I mean, some Tarans, the reason why they are all small and squat is they're supposed to come from a heavier gravity planet than ours, and therefore they have this sort of, smaller stature and very strong, sturdy legs and arms due to that. And we always have this thought, if you, you ever watch AI, there are other sci-fi about in the future, we always think that, man will evolve. Well, actually, there's two ways to think of a man evolving. One is that we'll go with smaller and smaller bodies and giant heads on us, a la Mekon from Dan Dare, or we'll actually grow into sort of, 6, 8, 9, 10 foot beautifully streamlined live people as we our race progresses. So all I'm saying about this is I'm saying an awful lot, but nothing about the actual episode itself, because it really could have been quite a good story. I think that's what
really
I'm trying to say.
So, huh?
It could have been. This wasn't. What am I going to do? I might give my lowest rating. Yeah, I might give it. I might go as low as 1.5. Ooh, I'm not sure whether I can bear to go that low. for the fingerprints on the police car and the way it was tossed aside, as it were, and the can I go up to 2? Or will that upset too many people? I'll go 1.5.
Yeah, leave it at 1.5. Please don't go to 2.
1.5.
Oh my god! All right, Rick.
You mean the show didn't end a year ago? There's no reason to talk about... Oh, sorry. I'm sorry I was possessed by Robert just then. Bobby, I mean. Anyway. Actually, he stole from himself more than anything, and he did a bad job at it.
Certainly, he revisited storylines, didn't he? Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, it was a big letdown. You know, oh, you know, that looks familiar. Bang! Oh, that's what I thought. you know, come on, give me a break. You know, even when I was like, what was I, like 4 or 5 years old when it came out, what was it, 65?
Too far back.
May 64.
64, okay, I was like 4 years old. It didn't even scare me then. So,
says what?
This episode, there's nothing scary at all about this episode.
Yeah, nope. I've given lower, but I'm going to give it a 0.
Hey, there you go. All right. That makes sense. All right.
Well, Dave, we were either the sane or insane ones in this one, huh?
Well, no. It was a very poor and half-hearted attempt. It really was that idea. I actually quite like the actor who played the policeman. Peter Mark Richmond, still alive, by the way, age 88. And I mean, he was one of these jobbing actors, so he was in lots of different things.
He's still alive?
Yeah. Oh, wow. Hang on a minute. Wait, let me have a look. Well, it says on the wiki page, it doesn't give a date for that. It says 1945 to present.
Nice.
Although,
okay.
That's years active. No, it doesn't. It just says when he was born. It doesn't give the year of his death. But 88. If he was born in 1927, do the people? Yeah, that means that's 2015, isn't it?
Yeah.
As I said before, the episode would have been better if it was more psychological than the end. I could have probably accepted it a little bit better. So.
You know what this takes us to? This takes us to dun 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 dun, the last episode of Twilight Zone series.
And it was 5 years in the making, people. Yes.
5 years in the making. That's right. And now we get to the last episode.
It's not bad.
Now here we go with the last episode.
Say the secret words and a deco drop down. $50 if you get the correct answer. George Bellman.
No, you're not saying it right. You got to say it. Say the void.
The void. The secret void is. That's crazy. All right. Last episode.
Yep.
Okay. It is called The Bewitching Pool.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to let you give an opening clip for it, Robert.
Well, meaning this is the last episode, I did something special with this clip. So here we go for the last story of the series, The Bewitching Pool.
Oh.
We hear a lot of stories here on Walton's Mountain. And we've been through a lot of things as well. We've been through war, depression, war again. But the strangest story we ever heard was a lady that lived in the woods called Aunt T. She had a bunch of children that lived in this small shack. The whole thing is where she gets the flour to feed the kids, make the endless cakes and bread. Where did she get the help to take care of these kids? It's a story that is told here in the mountains and beyond. The Twilight Zone.
And now, Mr. Serling.
A swimming pool not unlike any other pool. A structure built of tile and cement and money. A backyard toy for the affluent, wet entertainment for the well-to-do. To Jubb and Sportshare, where this pool holds mysteries not dreamed of by the building contractor. not guaranteed in any sales brochure. For this pool has a secret exit that leads to a never-never land. A place designed for junior citizens who need a long voyage away from reality. Into the bottomless regions of the Twilight Zone.
Ooh, we get a Harpo on that one.
Oh, isn't that lovely? That's just absolutely lovely. Harpo Marx plays on me. Oh, my goodness. Well, we have a brother and sister, Sport Sherwood and Jeb Sherwood. And they live in this large, expensive house with a couple of really cold and sensitive, self-centered parents. And Sport and Jeb, they're beside their swimming pool, just mind their own business. And this young boy in a Huckleberry Finn straw hat pops up from the deep end of their pool and invites them to follow him. So they do. They dive underwater. And they come back up in a swimming hole bordering on a rustic, simple homestead. And you have an assortment of children. They're playing in the yard. And in contrast to their lavish home of neglect and insults, they're welcomed and loved from the moment they arrive at this humble children's paradise. There's only one adult there. His name's Auntie. Auntie. Sweet, kind, patient, elderly woman. And she loves the children. And she explains to them that she has many children who came there from parents who did not deserve them. I guess she makes such a decision. But when Sport and Jeb decide to go home for fear that the parents will be worried, they learn that their parents have decided to get a divorce. And then they realize that they hadn't even missed them while they were gone. And then the parents tell the Jeb and Sport that they have to decide which parent they want to live with. And they insist they know right that minute. So the children, they have this epiphany that neither parent truly loves them. So ignoring their parents' shouts and carrying on, Sport and Jeb race back to the pool and they dive in. And then after a few moments, they don't reemerge. And then their father jumps in to rescue them. But he discovers that they've disappeared. And then he and the mother, they start shouting the children's names in despair. But Sport and Jeb are now happily living with Auntie, whose love is unconditional and everlasting. So Sport then hears the increasingly distant and remorseful voice of her mother. But after a moment of regret, she ignores her and she focuses on her new life. And Rod Serling, in his closing narration, asks the audience to consider how real an unhappy child's world of escape might become.
And then the Huck boy had him go over to the fence, give him some white paint, and tell
and
him to go paint the fence.
White wash, not that fence. That's right. Oh, my God. This was an awful episode to end a classic and amazing series like The Twilight Zone. You've got two kids caught in a divorce battle. Who do you want to live with, me or her? What? I mean, how can you make two children choose between their parents as if they're choosing which movie they want to watch that night? The parents, they were self-centered, they were arrogant, they were stupid, they were imbeciles. And I had to laugh when the kids jumped in the second time. And this bitch of a mother says, they've been down there for a long time. And the moron dad says, very nonchalantly, yeah, I know.
And then we choose. Home or shack? Home or shack? Well, anyway.
Should I jump in and save them? Or should I not jump in and save them? Yeah.
I won't.
I know they've been down there a long time. Oh, my God, the jackasses. But, of course, you know, I do have questions.
Oh, we all do.
Well, of course. Better
life and all that stuff in general.
Yeah, well, what's your future going to be like? Are they going to grow up there? I mean, Auntie's the only adult. If they do grow up, what becomes of them? Do they become anything? I mean, is there a school there? What happens to these kids? I mean, are they going to grow up to be doctors and lawyers? And but where are the other adults? Where are the schools for the? I'm confused. There's no adults to teach them. So I guess this is one of those open-ended stories. really, though.
Well, also, too, Lynn, is that the same time period or not? Do we know that's actually 1964
It could be like 1842 or something.
Well, I don't think so, because those towels looked like the company finished them straight out of the hotel they were staying at. So they were very posh towels that they were handed.
Good point. Good point.
That could have been brought by the other kids that came through wherever, too, so, you know.
Well, to be honest, you know, I really didn't care. I didn't care what happened to them because, you know, it was one of those episodes that you kind of leaves you cold. It really leaves you cold. You don't care about the parents. And the kids, you're like, well, okay, now they're with Auntie, and I guess that's it. You know, you don't know what's going to happen to them. And in a way, you don't really care. I mean, I wish that The Twilight Zone had ended with a much better episode, but it didn't. I mean, I wish The Twilight Zone hadn't ended at all. I wish the classic stories with the great twist endings could have gone on forever, but they didn't. And so when it's all said and done, I'm just grateful that The Twilight Zone and Rod Serling existed at all, because I believe the television was better because of them, and I'll never forget them. And I miss Rod Serling, I really do. But I'll give this episode, as much as I hate to do it, I'm going to give it a 1, only because I don't want to go out on a 0. I'm only giving it a 1 in memory and recognition of the writing genius known as Rod Serling. So, turn it over to you, Robert.
Okay, thank you, Lynn. Yeah. When I did my review for this, the written part of it, I quoted the Mother Goose rhyme about the old woman who lived in a shoe. Said there was an old woman who lived in a shoe. She had so many children she didn't know what to do. She gave them some broth without any bread. Then she whipped them all soundly and put them to bed. And it was Mother Goose nursery rhyme, 1794.
That's right. Yeah.
So that's very much what this episode felt like. And I mean, it's a vast difference from season one, Where Is Everybody, to where we are at this point, to just out a nursery rhyme to end the whole series with. It's too bad that out of the 3 or 4 good ones out of this whole season, that we could have ended with 20,000 Feet or Living Doll or even The Mask, something, you know, a lot different that would have been, you know, a proper ending than what we got with this. It was very interesting that Earl Hammer Jr. Said he got the idea when he was living in the San Fernando Valley region of California. He said he witnessed the high divorce rate and effect it had on the children. Coming up with this story, he felt that this would represent wish fulfillment or escapism for children in such situations. Of course, with my little clip that I play, he would go on to do the series called The Waltons. Unfortunately, this had to be set as a fairy tale because it couldn't be reality. I mean, there's, you know, lots of questions. I mean, you know, Lynn had her questions, and I had mine, too. And, you know, the questions that I asked was, where did she get all the supplies to keep the children fed? Where did she, you know, did she have a magic flour barrel to make endless cakes and breads? Also, where did she get the meat to feed the kids? Was the Shasta the kids live? No, go ahead.
Meow.
Meow. was the shack the kids lived in like the TARDIS from Doctor Who? Was it bigger on the inside, or did it just expand when adding more kids? Did the other kids come from magical swimming pools, or were there other objects that could bring the kids to Aunt T? Were there even neighbors around? Who helped care for the children?
Figured she was going to buy her stuff somewhere. Who was she buying it from? You know, she was the only adult, apparently.
You know what would have been ironic if the girl's name was, it was named Dallas. Then that would have kind of, you know, connection.
Alice in the Looking Glass, yes.
But unfortunately, it's very boring, more talkative. You generally don't feel for the parents because they should have never had kids in the first place.
Got that right.
They were socialites climbing the ladder of society, and the kids were in the ways how it ended up. So, And it's sad because, you know, where is everybody rated between a 4 or 5 for a lot of people? I can only give it, as Lynn did, a 1 for the Bewitching Pool. And it's sad that such a fantastic series like The Twilight Zone had to end this way. But
exactly.
A few years down the road, we get a series called Night Gallery. And Rod did write for that as well. So.
Yep.
Okay.
Anyway, I guess said I give it 1.
Okay, Dave.
Okay, season 5, episode 156, June 19th, 1964. Wasn't intended, of course, to be the last episode. I think they had some issues with it. And in fact, those issues seem to have affected the way the actual program played out, because this was one I did manage to rewatch again today. And it was on YouTube.
I'm
thinking,
so sorry, Jabe. So very, very sorry.
But I was watching and I thought, the person who's uploaded this, they've made an error. They've done something wrong. Because they put the ending up at the beginning. So I watched the first 2 minutes thinking, oh, they've got it out of order. Ah, this is only going to be a clip of the thing, not the whole episode. And then it goes to the opening credits. And then, of course, I read on the wiki page that the first 2 minutes that you have, the cold opening, is exactly the denouement, as it were. It's the actual ending of what happened. So there's no tension at all. We know that the kids make the decision, you know, to break away from these uncaring parents, and we don't know where they're going to. I was almost surprised it didn't say, when it came after the break, it didn't say, you know, 1 week earlier, you know, on screen, or something like that. What a shambles of parents. I mean, there was an absolutely fantastic house and mansion. All right, it was an outdoor pool. But in those days, people, especially, I suppose, in America, still have outdoor pools rather than indoor ones. But it was a heated pool, it says in the narration. They've got these marvellous gardens. He's got the cocktail drinks cabinet out there. They've got all these posh furniture around the pool. And they can't even teach the kids to talk what proper, like, proper. I mean, all right, if they're in a certain part of the States that has that sort of a drawl, fine. But, I mean, the kids were almost talking like country yokels. Apologies to anybody who talks like that. One would have thought that given that sort of money and success, there would have been, you know, if she was going to chastise the children, it would be when they drop their H's or drop their letters and say, speak to your sister properly, you know, or don't answer that, or, you know, none of that. We had that absurd scene, as you quite rightly say, where she's not caring about them all, and then suddenly right at the end, oh, children. 2 children were in that pool. Never mind sending her husband in to die for one. She's supposed to get both of them out at once. Why didn't she dive in and say, you go for him, I'll go for her?
Just remember, Dave, if two goes in, one only survives.
Go in, one comes out.
She didn't want to mess up her hair. She didn't want to mess up her hair.
I didn't see any shark fin circling around, but there you go, it's possible. I mean, really, if that was their attitude, then the kids would have been better off at private school, wouldn't they, really? I mean, that would have been the solution, because they obviously, you know, now, again, I don't know American law, but some people might say, well, when you get divorced, all the money goes to the lawyers anyway, so they would be impoverished. But if they didn't get divorced, perhaps the heartless couple, I mean, perhaps there wouldn't have been any story. I mean, we all know these, you know, there's no place like home and Wizard from Oz and all that. It's always where there's a stepmother are, the child's unhappy are, the real parents have died, that you have this issue where the children make this fantasy world, or Narnia, or whatever it happens to be. So again, he took a really good idea and made a rubbish episode. it's a kind of magic, really, isn't it? The little notes I put here, it was Willoughby for the kids, wasn't it?
Yeah, that's right.
The other thing that threw me again, we watched it the first time, they follow this young lad, as you say, in the straw hat. And as soon as they come through, there he is, as dry as a bone, in his clothes, with his hat on, fishing.
Isn't that weird? I know.
That's bad idea. But of course, that was exactly the same scene that they played at the end. So they didn't bother filming mm-hmm. that twice. They used the same one where they'd followed him, where he was. They were immediately following him, to the point whereby which he hands them towels, but he doesn't need a towel himself, even though he's come out of the same water.
Yeah, they used the same scene twice.
Yeah, because they'd run out of footage, haven't they? And the voiceover is repeated a few times. We've already mentioned the lady who did the voiceover, June Frey, who is still alive, born in 1917, 97 she is, still alive, lives in Springfield, Massachusetts. And very apt for her to live in Springfield, because she's a voiceover artist. I don't think she's been on The Simpsons.
Rocky, Rocky and Bullwinkle,
From The Serfs and Cindy Lou Who and lots of others. So she's done an awful lot. The main lady, all I can say is that a certain millionaire called Howard Hawks must have married her before he saw her acting and thought, well, that's never going to be the mother of my kids, because famously she was married to Howard Hawks. For a few years, from 1953 to 1959, and she, in actual fact, was a model, actress, didn't act or do modelling while she was married to him, and then went back to her career, exactly mirroring the part she was playing here, where with this husband, now she's thinking of leaving her, she'd gone for a job, hadn't she? He'd seen a car parked and she'd gone for an interview. She was going to get a job because she knew she was going to be a woman of independence means again. So it was basically her life story that was being portrayed there. Lots of others. And this is almost unprecedented. She's still alive. Born in 1928, she's 86. I mean, the number of times, they all seem to have died of smoking, didn't they?
Back then,
they all died in the 40s and 50s. So maybe it was just the fact they put so little effort into the acting of these stories, they were able to live a little longer. I don't know. What else have I put down? Yeah, this Ma, I'm not too sure about this woman. She seemed to me, it seemed to be a little bit Oliver. She seemed a little bit of a Fagin character. Oh, when you're here with me, I don't make you work because I want to sell what you make. It's good for your soul. It's good. It give you good backbone. But she was going to set the girl to sewing straight away. She had the boys doing something, polishing shoes. I mean, if that scene had gone on any longer, I was expecting her to show them how to pickpocket scarves out of things.
Fagin.
It's a female Fagin, I thought. So again, there was no energy, there was no heart, there was no commitment. They hadn't got enough minutes in the can, so they topped and tailed it with the same scene, which detracted even more because you know what's going to happen. There were some funny choices in terms of, it didn't gel that they had this house, they had these professionals. You would have thought that those children, yes, they would have been treated strictly, but since they had an ideal way of making her a nasty mother, why didn't they make her where she was so strict, sit up straight, girl, sit up straight, you'll never get a husband if you don't sit up straight and take that food out of your mouth when you're talking and, that sort of strictness, you would have thought.
Yeah.
Rather than, just get out of my way, kids, which seemed a little bit lazy. So I've talked a long time, which must mean, I think I'll give this a one. Said it. I've gone down to a one. First time I've ever gone down to a one, I think. Go down to a one for this one.
All right. Well, that's okay. Okay. Rick.
As a witch, I protest this having anything to do with witches in it, this episode.
You say you're disavowing Auntie for that situation?
Yes.
Rick?
Yep. First of all, I do have something to pick on. This is a typical Los Angeles actor's family. And yes, when you don't, well, maybe you didn't know kids when you were younger, but when I was younger where I lived. Quite a few people got divorced, and the kids were asked, who do you want to live with all the time? Mm-hmm. You want to live with your mom or you want to live with your dad?
It was never explained that they had to go, presumably, whichever they chose, they both had to go with. I mean, that didn't seem to be spelled out, did it? I mean, what if one wants to go with one and one with the other?
Well, I think they should have given a little more time to decide.
Yeah, true. No, this is the... okay. My best friend I've known for anyway.
Get out there, boy!
It's the son of a famous actor, Jason Robach, okay? His father was exactly like the father in this episode, you know, like, yeah, okay. Yeah, I had you, so, you know, I divorced your mom, you two were on your own. Bye. Have fun. You know, so it's not really strange to me of the, you know, the way they behaved.
Don't you think it was weird that they had Southern accents and neither of their parents had Southern accents?
Yeah, but that was just bad casting.
Tell me about it, really. Wasn't
and,
that?
And as sort of an aside, for the same reason I hate working with animals, I hate working with kids. Oh, all the screaming and the crying, and that's just the parents.
Why do you hate working with animals?
That's the parents.
I would love working with animals.
Oh, all this barking and crying, and that's just the owners.
No, don't. Come on. I love animals.
Yes. Never give
I
the kids wanna, a break.
I wouldn't want to work with kids, but I would love to work with animals.
Come on, please. I mean, like I said, I don't know who was worse, a parent to a kid or an owner to an animal. The one and only time I worked on a show with animals, a PA went to get some water for a dog. Right, he took the ball.
Yeah.
He was gonna go take it to the tap. Right.
Yeah.
The owner comes up and goes, "Oh no, my dog only drinks bottled water." I felt so sorry for the freaking PA.
Well,
probably
ate
green M&Ms too, so, you know.
Well, that's a problem. No, because you have an animal with an asshole for an owner. But, you know, I feel bad for the animals because I would love to work with animals. It's a shame that the owners have to be such jackasses.
Yep. But anyway, I'm digressing here.
I think we all did today, Rick, so you're not the only one.
Don't know where the heck this place was. Don't care. Again, kind of resent being a Wiccan. The implication to me kind of implies that Auntie is a witch of some type.
Yeah, I thought that too.
So this gets another zero from me.
Well, at least you didn't have no children cooking in the oven, so I guess that's a good thing.
Hey, you know what? She might have been eating those kids. Yeah.
You don't know what was in those pies.
That's right. And funny, she always had some meat and stuff to feed them. There you go, right there. Auntie. America's
you know
most wanted. We got her.
You know what, guys? I hear a noise coming.
Noise?
That noise was anyway.
Oh my God, Auntie's on America's Most Wanted. She was a dinosaur once. Well, you know what? That takes us to the very end of the Twilight Zone series.
I know you're so sad. I am too, but
this is the end, my friend.
The party's over.
Uh-oh, someone's calling before we go. I wonder who it could be.
Who is it?
I know. I guess they can't use a regular phone there. Hello? Oh. Yeah? You decided to call to the last show. Oh, it's nice of you to call. Okay. I'll let everybody know. Hey, everybody, guess who it is? It is Mr. Horse.
Mr. Horse!
And how are you doing today? Oh. Oh, you're doing okay. But, well, you want to call in and say how you felt about the last two episodes? Well, okay. So here he is, everybody, for the last time, ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Horse.
No, sir, I didn't like it.
Well, I'm not surprised. I'm kind of going that way. And how is your lovely lady doing there?
No, it's my sheep.
Okay, we'll go with that. Well, thank you, Mr. Horse, for calling in. We're going to miss you, and we really enjoyed having you on today's show. So, ladies and gentlemen, that was Mr. Horse.
Mr. Horse.
Oh, yay. So, okay.
I really hate to end the series. Well, we do have one more show, but I hate to end the series. This is it. This is it. The last two episodes. This is the end of the Twilight Zone.
This Sorry. Is the end, my friend.
The end. Yes, the end. Jim Morrison knew. Yes, it's very sad. And, oh my goodness. I don't even know what to say. It's all over. I love the series.
Well, we could do what Time Tunnel did. And what Quantum Leap did.
Oh, yeah.
That's true.
Full circle, yeah.
Of course, Robert could phone it in. Just put up the first episode again. Put the recording up again. You could have it on a spin cycle.
Well, I do want to thank everyone who's been with us. I know you haven't all been here from the beginning, but a lot of you have been here, you know, for many years, and I want to thank everyone who's been here. We started the show in 2009, so 6 years. We've been on the show for 6 years.
And especially want to thank you and Bobby for being a great host.
Yeah.
Thank you. Applause for you, everyone, Bobby. Thank you very much.
I've loved it. I really enjoyed the show. And, you know, we're going to miss doing it. I mean, in a way, it's like, okay, now I don't have to worry about doing it every 2 weeks. But in a way, I'm going to miss it. And you know, it's just been nice being with you guys every couple of weeks. And I love all of you. So.
Same with you, Lynn.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Same here.
Same too.
And thank you guys for coming on. We appreciate it. Rick Wall and
really
Dave. Thank you guys for Blue hanging out with us.
And I really do hope on Saturday, May 2nd.
And Felix. Oh, don't want to forget Felix. Thank
oh,
you, Felix.
Felix, I love you so much, Felix. I'm not going to live without you, Felix.
And just
found
for you
Felix
guys.
Felix running away.
Just for you guys, we're going to go out on a joke. I wanted to put this in when we were talking about the fear, but I just remembered it about these college guys were sitting in, at the table and they wanted to play some poker and said, why don't we ask Susie if she wants to join us to, you know, play some poker. So one of them goes over and asks Susie, says, Susie, you want to play some poker with us? And she said, sure. So the guy got his finger and he poked her on the side.
Oh my God.
I'm now going to give my first zero rating
for the
show. That
was almost as bad as the episode.
I'll give it a zero rating.
Oh, and Felix says his show Mad Men is also ending. I know, Phil. It's awful when your favorite show ends. I felt that when House ended, too. It's awful. Yeah. Well, hopefully, you know, we do still have one more show to go. 2 weeks from now, May 2nd, we're going to do our best and worst of the Twilight Zone, favorite actors, favorite actresses. And I really, truly hope that Dave, I hope you'll be there, and Rick, I hope you'll be there. I just, Felix, I want you all there, but hopefully, I'm thinking Robert sometime in September, maybe we'll start doing the night gallery.
That'd be good.
Yeah, I need the summer off. I know that. I need the summer off. I've got to do some things, and I got to relax for a while, and not have the show every couple of weeks. But yeah, I would really like to do the night gallery. So,
well, first season should be pretty easy. It's only 6 episodes. So.
Yeah, I know.
It wasn't very long.
Pretty good. So, Dave and Rick, are you in for that?
Yeah, sounds good. Unfortunately, I got to go because I've been sitting here for over an hour. And
all right. Well, it's the
end. I think we're on our way.
We're on our way. Okay,
so
guys.
I shall see you in 2 weeks, hopefully.
See you in 2 weeks. Thanks for being here. And
thanks,
love all you guys. I'll see you. Have a great weekend.
Yes.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye, all.
And then I fell in love with the most wonderful boy in the world. We'd take long walks down by the river, or just sit for hours gazing into each other's eyes. We were so very much in love. And then one day, he went away, and I thought I'd die, but I didn't. And when I didn't, I said to myself, is that all there is to love? Is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, my friend, then let's keep. I know what you must be saying to yourselves. If that's the way she feels about it, why doesn't she just end it all? Oh no, not me. I'm not ready for that final disappointment, because I know, just as well as I'm standing here talking to you, that when that final moment comes and I'm breathing my last breath, I'll be saying to myself, is that all there is? Is that all there is? If that's all there is, break out the booze and have a ball. If that's all there is.